in those days, we didn't have time to discuss anything. You know, we got to get off the ground. We got to get this stuff there. I would spend, you know, till 3 o'clock in the morning on the phone lining up stuff. And you only live beyond your next load in a time of emergency, because being paramedics, that was the only thing I knew was emergencies. You know, of course, you're arranging and cursing the entire time. Where the hell is, why don't we have, what? Are you kidding me? We don't have a truck. We got to have a truck. Where are we going to get a truck? I don't know where we're going to get a truck. So it was, by its very nature, it was a thing that many charities, the old establishments, see, I didn't know anything about running a charity. So I just knew how to run an ambulance. And on an ambulance, you improvise from the very minute you arrive on the scene. I mean, you have your protocols, but anything can happen and nothing's ever the way you plan for it. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the NGOs who, you know, they deal with domestic stuff, easy stuff. Well, not easy, but it's hard, but it's complicated. Let me get myself in trouble here.
It's actually relatable to the lady you met on the riverside. This food and these antibiotics are for the animals and not for the children. It's like very clearly a protocol.
Yeah, very clear protocol. And I'm looking at her, watching people do stuff like that. You know, I said less than 100 yards right here, right at that house over there, there's a little girl that has a raging fever. I really could use those antibiotics. I can run over there and give her a shot, and I got a doctor over here. He'll give her three more, and she'll be okay. Well, I'm sorry, we can't help with that. I mean, what can you say? I got the antibiotics. I got it to the little girl. And you do have to push people around. You have to Donald Trump it sometimes. a lot of the people just they go like a deer in the headlights. They just stop and stare. Mm-hmm. Like, hello, wake up! Come on, we got to do something here. Well, even the politicals there, they weren't trained. You know, mm-hmm. the people of Honduras, the government was not trained to handle this. You know, the capital was flooded with amazing, you know, high water and people dying, and 10,000 or 8,000 people died at one time or something. Yeah. You know, that thing we had in Guatemala, the thing that we worked with. Uh-huh. These mudslides in Honduras are in that time because the hurricane sat over the country and just rained. It washed down, you know, just these giant hillsides. You would see people, well-meaning groups, church groups coming down there. They were just, they couldn't handle it. They had to go back home. It just was like, my God, there's, I didn't know there were going to be bodies here. I didn't know there were going to be dead people lying all over the place. And the people that handle that better are the, you know, medical paramedics, and particularly firefighters are used to seeing, you know, various body parts. But it can stun you. It can just stop you. And it'll still get to you if you've done it all your life. It's not like paramedics are immune to the things they see, but it hits you later. It takes you down later. You'll go into, I guess it's what they call it, traumatic stress syndrome. Yeah. When I was a paramedic, anytime we had a bad call, we had to go through this critical incident stress debriefing. And the whole thing in a nutshell is to try to get you to talk about the horror that you saw with all the other paramedics who shared it with you. If you want to go back a little further in time, back to around 1995, before I had been to Honduras, I was working with Gaston Emergency Medical Services out of Gastonia, North Carolina. And I was on a call. It was one of those summer days, beautiful summer day and hot. And I'm trying to think of the location. We were up near Bessemer City, but they would put us by what we call, I think at the time it was called a standby point, where you wait. And if another ambulance is on the call, they'll stick you up in the middle of nowhere. You just sit on the side of the road. You don't have a base, and you wait to see if a call goes out that way, because the dispatchers are trying to put you at the places that they think they need you the most. And it was about 11 o'clock in the morning, and we got a call to go up above Bessemer City or Cherville, somewhere between Bessemer City and Cherville, and wait. And we're just sitting there, no big deal. And so we, you know, at around 15, 10 minutes to 12, we go on our lunch break, you know, so we declared ourselves, you know, out of service. And we tell the dispatcher we're going to drive to Bessemer City, where we can hamburger place and get a hamburger. And we, no sooner had we got there, gotten, made our order, that we got a call to go back within a call of like 8 children drowning in a lake to turn around and go back. And of course, we ran back to the call. And at that time, I became a paramedic in 1991. So I was, I'd been around the block enough. I was in charge of the car. I had an assistant, a basic EMT working with me, good guy. And we went up there. And we got, and I drove right past where we had been parked, racing toward this small little community lake that was next to a trailer park. And I got there, and of course we got to the scene, and there's people there, and I saw a little paddle boat turned over on its top in this lake, a small pond, maybe about 200 meters across, not even 200 meters, probably 100 meters across, round. And I saw a little boy on the shore and people around him. And I saw a dead guy, a guy who obviously drowned. And when I got to the scene, the little boy was about an 8-year-old boy. And of course, I'm trying to get the story, but of course, I got a patient in front of me. So I start to work the child. And with children, that have drowned, you just don't know. I mean, the first question is, how long has the child been down? Oh, it just pulled him out of the water just now. So I went to work on him, and we intubate him, and we start CPR, and we're doing it by the book. And the little boy just pinks up beautifully. He looks like he's going to make it. He looks great. I mean, his color's coming back, and he hasn't started breathing, and I don't have a heartbeat yet, but I'm feeling good about this kid, And immediately all the other medics arrive because they've got 6 or 7 more children in the lake. Divers are coming, and everybody's out there to try to help. And of course, beside me while I'm working is a dead guy, this older guy. It must have been about maybe 35 or 40 years old, and he's clearly dead as a doornail. Couldn't do anything for him, but I'm working the kid. The mother comes over from the trailer park, and of course, she sees her son. She runs and literally tackles me on his, hits me on the back, and they had to pull her off of me. And, I was saying, like, get the hell off of me, lady, let me do my damn job, And, of course, it's tense, you're doing the best you can do. And then my supervisor gets there, and Jackie says, Roger, we're going to go ahead and take the kid in. You stay here and wait while they recover the other bodies of the other children. Which is like taking an attack dog off their prey, He's like, my kid. But, you do it because that's protocol, and that's what you should do. And, man, it's just another day on the job, and you pass the little boy off. And sure enough, I found out later they took him to the ER, and everybody was saying, man, come on, kid, come on, you're there. He was doing well, but he didn't make it. He died. There was nothing there to work with. And, of course, I had to wait there. And I can remember the feeling that I had waiting there with my my defibrillator in my hand and all my medical gear and totally prepared. And I was the paramedic on the scene who had to pronounce the other children dead as they came out. And not really, because we had another guy there to do it. But still, I was there in case somebody was viable. There was always a hope that a child got trapped underneath the paddle boat and there might have been air in there. And so they all died. We had one child that swam to safety and another one, I think, that could swim. And there were six children died that day, plus this guy. It was just a terrible day. And I went home, and everybody said, you okay? I said, I'm fine. Guys, come on. I'm a pro. Yeah, I've seen this before. No big deal. And I got home that night, and I'm watching television. Of course, the calls on TV, and I go, like, well, yeah, you don't usually like to watch it. I turned it off. And I went back, and I had my little computer, and I was just doing like what you normally do. And guys, I started crying, and I could not stop crying. I can remember I had to pick my mouse up. It was in like a flood of water. I could not stop crying. And it was to the point I was laughing and crying at the same time. I said, I can't stop. This is nuts. You can't do this. This is impossible. And I'm crying my eyes out, just sitting there. I'm not really boo-hooing, just water's coming out of my face. I'm thinking I could get dehydrated and die. My clothes, my shirt's wet, my desktop is soaking. And of course, I went back in the next day, and there was the talk of the critical incident stress, program, and we went through that, and a lot of the other paramedics who were there on the scene had to go through it. But yeah, it's a it'll sneak up on you. You'll see things that you will work your way through until you're alone, sitting all by yourself, and then boom. And I had dreams about that, you know, for about 2 or 3 years, you know, about that little kid. And, you know, because I thought I was going to save him. And that's just one of, you know, things. If you're in the business long enough, you're going to see terrible things. And you're going to do a lot of wonderful things. You're going to deliver babies. You're going to save lives. You're going to, you know, see it. But it does, it builds on you. Doctor friend of mine who was talking to me one day about it, he said, Roger, you know about anaphylactic shock, don't you? And I said, yeah, anaphylactic shock is when you get enough toxins on board, like a bee sting, that if you've had too many, they can actually build up. And even though you're not allergic to bee stings, you can suddenly have this incredible anaphylactic shock. And he said the same thing goes for this too. You see it so much that you don't realize that every time you deal with it, that's just more on your back until suddenly one day you just crack wide open. He said the crying was a perfect example. It was textbook. You couldn't stop crying. I said, I couldn't stop. You know, clearly I finally stopped crying. You know, paramedics have a saying, you know, all breathing and bleeding eventually stops. But yeah, it was nuts. I couldn't stop. And I'm illogical. I'm not crying because I'm distraught, or I didn't feel distraught. It's the strangest feeling you've ever had. It actually gets to be humorous. You start to laugh at yourself while you're crying. And a lot of paramedics or people who do that kind of work do it. So it gets to you. It gets to you. Well, you know, part of doing the charity and doing particularly medical work is you've got to separate yourself from the patient and do your job. And if you can't, you need to get out of the room, make yourself scarce. The logic of being in a medical profession is pretty much logical. You know, it's like being an airplane pilot. You know, you have so much fuel, yeah, your plane's either flying or it's not, and every decision you make will determine the outcome, good or bad. Republic, that's us. Down to the tropical sun go those expatriated Americans, looking to find the sun.